Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
This is New Books in Science Fiction, the podcast that discusses works of speculative fiction with the amazing and hardworking authors who write them. Welcome to the Music is a Living Thing edition of the show. Today, I'm delighted to have Sarah Pinsker on the pod. She's the author of A Song for a New Day. Sarah is a highly accomplished writer. She's won the Nebula Award and Sturgeon Award for novelettes, but A Song for a New Day is her first novel. Sarah's also a singer-songwriter with three albums. And that's not going to come as a surprise to anyone who's read A Song for a New Day, because her book so vividly and realistically depicts the life of dedicated musicians. And now Sarah's on the line with me from her home in Baltimore. And having just finished her book, I'm tempted to say, let's give her a big hand. But since we don't have a live audience, I'm just going to say, welcome to New Books in Science Fiction.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be here.
You've had a busy year, publishing-wise. You had your first collection of short stories come out in March, and now your first novel is out, which came out in September. So congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a long year in good ways, but it was pretty busy.
Well, how are you feeling now?
Like, I need a little bit of time at my house and maybe in a dark room. I did a lot of traveling and promoting for those two books, and then had to write another book while I was doing that. So it's been a lot, and I loved every second of it. And also, I'm looking forward to a sort of less travel winter.
Was it just a coincidence that they both came out in the same year? Is it just fortuitous?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're two different publishers who didn't coordinate with each other. And the sales of the books were at pretty different times, but they were on different publishing schedules. So it just worked out that way. I was happy that it worked out in that particular order. And I was happy that there were 6 months in between. And I'm really happy with both experiences. It's two different publishers that are vastly different experiences, but they've both been good experiences so far, which is cool.
A Song for a New Day is told from the point of view of two characters. And let me just say, they have great names. There's Rosemary Laws and Luce Cannon. And to be clear, Luce is spelled like the name, L-U-C-E. But true to their names, Rosemary is very law-abiding, and I would say Luce is much more, she's much more loose and anti-establishment and rebellious. And I thought a good way of getting into the book would be if you could tell our listeners just a little bit more about these two characters, who they are.
Sure. Well, Luce, I should also say, is a stage name that she chose for herself. And that she's a character who I had worked with before in my story, Our Lady of the Open Road. And she had been very easy to write, so I just wanted to explore her life a little more.
And that story won the Nebula, is that right?
Yeah. So she's an up-and-coming musician at the time that the events of the beginning of the novel happen. And she's sort of at the cusp of something, possibly, like who knows, it wasn't necessarily going to happen for her, but it seemed like it was going to. And And then things changed so that touring and promoting music was no longer in a live music setting was no longer a possibility for her. So she is someone who feeds off of live performance. And so that's a state of being that she isn't very happy with, and a status quo that she's not very happy with.
And then Rosemary Laws is quite a different person who comes of age at a different time.
Yeah, Rosemary is a child of the after. So she grows up after the events that change things for Luce. And as far as she's concerned, a lot of it is good stuff. So it's a fun contrast between the two characters, in that one of them is highly skeptical of everything, and one is curious but also okay with the way things have gone. So having two characters with vastly different worldviews is a great way to get some interesting conflict of the type that I like, which doesn't tend to be, you know, facing off with swords. I like when characters have to kind of deal with both sides or multiple sides of a situation and confront each other.
Yeah, and I want to talk about their relationship and their points of view in the story. But before we do that, I thought, just to give our listeners a little bit more of a feel for, you know, what this world is like and a little insight into Luce, I wondered if we could talk about something that does happen early in the book. So I don't think it's giving too much away, but it's a decision Luce makes when she and her backup band, at this time in her life when she's kind of an up-and-coming performer and they're traveling around in a kind of crappy van and performing at small venues, but she's got a hit on the radio, and they end up at this classy old cool retro theater called The Peach. And then something happens and her label wants her to cancel the concert. And it's this really pivotal moment, and it really explains or plays a role in Luce's life going forward and, interestingly, the history of music. So I thought it was worth pausing over maybe a moment, if you're okay talking about that.
Sure, absolutely.
So maybe you could explain why her label wanted her to cancel and how Luce responds to that request.
Okay, yeah, so that is near the beginning of the book, and the label wants her to cancel because the government has come out with some information that they're not being clear about the source, but they're saying there's been some escalating violence, and then they just say we need everyone to stay home tonight, which to me was kind of reminiscent. You know, there's some days I remember after September 11th where, you know, maybe it was better. The government, you were going to listen right at that moment. And so people, so the government says, we'd like everyone to stay home. We'd like, you know, movie theaters and stores and everything to close down for the night. And everyone listens except for Luce doesn't really want to, and she's in a position not to. Like, the club is kind of okay with going forward. You know, well, they would have to refund money otherwise, and what if people were already on the way there? And so they decide that if she's okay with it, they would be okay with it. Like, the staff who remain would be comfortable staying there, even though they're being told not to. And so she kind of weighs the options, and she comes down on the side of that she'd rather make music in a bad situation, which is generally her MO.
Right. She finds a lot of comfort in performing and being with people in flesh and blood, in person. And at a dire moment like this, she decides this feels like the right thing to do, for even if just a handful of people come up, for those, that handful of people, it's worth doing.
Right.
This is the moment that before and after you can kind of draw the line. There's a before when people had concerts like this, and then there's an after. And, you know, Luce ends up finding out that she basically gave the last live concert in the before, right at this cusp, which gives her a certain degree of fame. And we learn about all this years later, because we jump ahead, and Rosemary, as you've said, lives in this new world. And It's true. It's funny. It reminded me a little of post 9/11. Like, her parents reminded me of some of the middle class people who left New York City right after 9/11. I live in New York City, and my kid was 2.5 at 9/11 and around that time. And some people did leave who could afford to because they decided that cities just weren't safe. And her parents actually moved to a farm, and Rosemary grows up in what sounds like total isolation. I mean, she lives in virtual reality, as many people do. Maybe you could talk a little bit about what her life is like. And I think I get the feeling she's at one end of a spectrum, but basically she, as you've said, is comfortable living this way, but she basically knows people through avatars. She doesn't spend time with people in person other than her family. You know, eventually when she goes out into the world, she doesn't know about the protocol of, do you hug someone and when do you hug someone? And it feels really uncomfortable. And she can't guess people's ethnicities because people in person have such unique visages that they don't conform to the templates of the avatars that she's used to. So maybe you could just talk a little bit about her upbringing.
Yeah. So she is another extreme, obviously. So she, as you said, her parents moved out to a very rural area, and they are also not people who are super keen on the new technologies. So she has this double whammy of like being isolated and then not being able to use the most high tech stuff available. So she has grown up in a world where, like, she went to school for the most part in a school subsidized, I called them hoodies, the VR rigs that they use. And then she got a job working for a large online mega corporation where she does customer service. And so her job is online. Everyone she's ever known, basically, except for like one or two people in town who she doesn't really form a connection with, everyone is online. There's all kinds of ways to interact, and there's all kinds of like she's used to all these protocols where you can know anything that a person wants you to know about them. You know, you can click up that information, and so you don't have to guess things about them. Everything from, are they like, she gets confused whether people are hitting on her because there's some kind of flag system in place where you can, you know, denote whether that's what you're into or not. So there's all this stuff that she's faced with when she actually runs into real people where the signals just aren't as clear. And I had a lot of fun writing for her and writing for that online world, because it's pretty easy for me to write the "this stuff is bad, I love live music" side of things. But I also wanted to make sure that it was clear that there are good parts of it as well. So when she goes to her first online concert, her first VR concert, she notices that you can click to get subtitles, and you can click to get audio descriptive tags, and you can click for a vibration booster. There's all these accessibility things. And in point of fact, live music in a concert setting isn't accessible for everyone. Like, one of my favorite venues used to be in the front of a pizza place, and then when they remodeled, they moved their stage to the basement. And I have friends in wheelchairs who can't get down to the basement, so you know, that's one venue that they aren't able to get to. But there's a whole lot of places I can think of in town where you have to get up a couple steps to get in. And even if it's only one, that's a barrier already. And there are people who have compromised immune systems or might not have the money to go to a show, you know, or to might not have the transportation to get there. There are all these things that are barriers that you could get over if you had a VR rig. So I wanted to make there some good points to it as well, before saying, but, you know, there's a different thing that you get when you're live and in person.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor's the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
You have Rosemary and Luz kind of embodying these two different points of view, because Rosemary ends up working for the company that produces these virtual reality shows and brings music to the masses through these virtual reality schemes. And then there's Luz, who she's actually trying to sign up to do this, who loves the live performance and wants to continue it. And to her, it represents the world from before and a better world. And so I thought this would be a good time to ask you about your relationship to music. Obviously, you're a singer-songwriter. When did you start playing? And do you like traveling from venue to venue? I think I saw in your bio that you used to do that, or you do that sometimes, and you do live performances. Do you like it as much as Luz does?
I do. I've said a couple of times that I don't think I'm as good as she is, which is part of the joy of writing fiction, is you can write like she's not me and I'm not her, but also I think she is. I got to put the best of my favorite performers into her. I love live performance. I do. I love the travel side of it too. Actually, I don't love booking. So what I've been saying, and I think this is true, is that what I don't love is the music hustle. And I'm still okay with the fiction hustle right now. You know, like they seem like different beasts to me, or it might be that I just came in, I made it to a different place in fiction where some of that hustle gets to be shared with other people. But when I've had people helping book stuff for me in music, then I was way happier to be on the road. But I found there was this exhausting cycle where you would get on the road and then because you weren't working on the next cycle, you would have like a fallow season because of planning things in advance. And I just could never quite get ahead of that. And then I had a lot of issues where like my van would break down, like I would have made enough money to get through, you know, the winter without touring, and then the van would break down, that type of thing. And all my money would go into repairing my poor van. And like, I remember the downsides of it too, but I love playing music with people on stage. I love playing for an audience. I think the parts of me that are in Luz are the parts where the making a connection with an audience part, we're trying to win people over, like where she expresses that. I think that's pretty much my point of view coming through.
Well, you capture that so well. I mean, the magic of a live performance, I don't think I've ever appreciated as much as when I saw it through Rosemary's eyes, who is coming to it first with a lot of anxiety, like, oh my God, I'm in a crowded room and how do I get out? And there's too many people, and I'm not used to being around that many people. And then she finds her way to this place where she sees the magic of the chemistry between the performers, the audience, back and forth, a kind of wonderful feedback loop. And she comes to appreciate this very ephemeral thing that's gone when the performance is over.
Right. Yeah, I guess that's my point of view, too. That transcendent experience. It isn't every show. But, you know, if you're willing to get to that point, you often can. If you want to let a live show move you, then it probably will.
So Luz and Rosemary have something in common, I think. They both were raised in very particular environments and very sheltered environments. And there's an incredibly poignant scene where Luce returns to her childhood home after being rejected by her Orthodox Jewish family for being gay. And I wanted to ask, as a musician who is gay and Jewish, I wondered what elements of that part of Luce comes from your personal experience.
That doesn't come from my personal experience. That comes from reading other people's accounts. I am very fortunate to have a wonderful family that has accepted everything about me, including my sexuality and including my weird decision in college to chase music instead of grad school and everything along the way. So her experience is definitely not mine in that regard.
That's good. It's no less poignant reading it in the story. It's very moving. So what's the process like for you writing a book versus writing short stories, which you've done a lot of, and this is your first novel, and I would even extend it to writing songs? I mean, they're very different, but I assume there's a lot of similarities as well in terms of the creative process.
Yeah, a story usually presents itself in a way that you can tell whether it's going to be a story or a longer project or a song, because a lot of songs are stories too. And it kind of depends on to some degree what it hangs on. Like if it hangs a lot on character, if it needs a lot of background, it may be a story and not a song. A song is sort of an immediate thing. Usually you have to kind of hit the meat of it quickly because you have three verses and a chorus, you know, maybe a bridge if you're lucky. So I guess that would be the answer. And a novel tends to be when you have a lot more that you want to explore about whatever it is that you're thinking about. So some of the themes of this I explored in that earlier story, Our Lady of the Open Road. And I also felt like I could separately come back to this and that there was a ton of other material in that world to play with. And there were other characters I wanted to follow. So that would be the one answer to that. In terms of process, songwriting, like a snippet of something might come to me. But there's this long, complicated, like, evocation that has to happen where I have to sit down and I have to play other people's songs for a while first, usually, before I can access whatever it is that I was trying to get to. Whereas a story a novel, you kind of know where you are based on where you were the day before. And a story starting from scratch, I usually go for a walk with my dog. And when I come back, I know, like, sort of what the first few paragraphs are verbatim, and then I can move from there. And I guess that happens with the song sometimes too. Something gets stuck in my head, and by the time I'm home, it's all about dog walking. Really, all three of them come down to walking the dog.
The magic of the canine.
Yeah.
So do you ever, if you're stuck on a short story, say, do you ever think, well, let me sing it? Or if you're writing a song and you're like, you know, this, there's actually too much here, I'm going to write a short story. Like, do they flow into one another, or does your mind work very separately?
Kind of separately. I don't think any of them have actually turned out to be in the wrong medium. They kind of introduce themselves fairly distinctly. I do have a lot of stories with music in them, and I know the music. I know how the music sounds. I've gone out of my way not to make those songs happen in real life, even though I know what they sound like, because I don't want to mess with people's mental images of them, but I do know them.
So does that mean you wouldn't want a movie made of your books because it would mess with people's mental images?
I would probably let that happen, but with the knowledge that it would kind of, that is a concern I would have, but I think I would let it happen. I would be curious.
So let me ask you something that comes up now, and it sort of overlaps with the themes of your book And I think it affects both writers and musicians, singer-songwriters, the idea of technology changing industries and fields, and not just technology, but the monopolies like Amazon, or in your novel, Stage Hollow Live, or Super Wally, these big companies that provide everything. And, you know, I think a lot of people would say they're taking away people's livelihoods, but other people might say, but they're making it easier to make a living because you can reach more audiences, you can self-publish, you can put things on your songs on SoundCloud. I wonder, as someone who's obviously thought a lot about this and lived it, how you discuss those issues.
Well, I think that universal basic income is a worthwhile thing to introduce to that discussion because it sort of changes the equation. You know, if there aren't jobs available, will there still be a way of, you know, living? And I feel like we may get there. There are experiments going on in towns in Canada right now, and Alaska sort of has that with that oil payment that they get.
Right.
That residents of Alaska get. So I feel like that may be a part of the equation that we're not quite at yet. I tend to be an optimist and think that in a perfect world, I don't know if we'll get there, but in a perfect world, in theory, there will be enough to go around. And if people don't have jobs, then there will be other ways to make a living, and because there will have to be, and then people can devote more of their time to other things, and maybe some interesting stuff would come out of that. In reality, I don't know, but I don't have to live there before we get there. I can just write stories about it.
What can we look forward to next from you?
I know that there's a novelette coming from tour.com in the summer 2020. I have a couple of short works coming out next year, at least. I'm dying to write more short fiction, and I will have a chance to do that more this year, so I'm happy about that. And I just turned in another novel about near future technology and how it affects people on a personal level, which is kind of my jam.
Excellent.
And in theory, I should have another album out as well. It's in the can, and I've sworn to myself that it will happen in 2020.
You are busy, busy. That's nice.
Yeah, we'll see. But in theory, it's all good stuff to come.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I've been chatting with Sarah Pinsker about her debut novel, A Song for a New Day, which came out from Berkeley in September. Thanks for listening to this episode of New Books in Science Fiction. If you don't subscribe yet, I have one question. What are you waiting for? And please leave a review, especially if you've been enjoying the show. Our theme music is by Michael Aaron of quivernyc.com. But today we are going to go out with a song composed and performed by Sarah Pinsker, who kindly consented to let us play the beginning of her song, Water Wings. The visionary editor-in-chief and founder of the New Books Network is Marshall Poe. Our perspicacious co-editor is Leanne Wilson, and I'm your host, Rob Wolf, author of The Alternate Universe. You can visit me at robwolf.net and follow me on Twitter at robwolfbooks. Now, go out and find a good book and enjoy.
Steer, Henry Steer, while I figure out what place is here. Bearing straight or Golden Gate, I wish our map would not mislead. At least we got the weather on our side.